Tales from the Jazz Age by F. Scott Fitzgerald. The Diamond as Big as the Ritz. Chapter 4. This is a story of the Washington family as Percy sketched it for John during breakfast. The father of the present Mr. Washington had been a Virginian, a direct descendant of George Washington and Lord Baltimore. At the close of the Civil War, he was a 25-year-old colonel with a played-out plantation and about $1,000 in gold. Fitznorman Culpepper Washington, for that was the young colonel's name, decided to present the Virginia estate to his younger brother and go west. He selected 24 of the most faithful blacks, who of course worshipped him, and bought 25 tickets to the west, where he intended to take out land in their names and start a sheep and cattle ranch. When he had been in Montana for less than a month, and things were going very poorly indeed, he stumbled on his great discovery. He had lost his way when riding in the hills, and after a day without food he began to grow hungry. As he was without his rifle, he was forced to pursue a squirrel, and in the course of the pursuit he noticed that it was carrying something shiny in its mouth. Just before it vanished into its hole, for Providence did not intend that this squirrel should alleviate his hunger, it dropped its burden. Sitting down to consider the situation, Fitznorman's eye was caught by a gleam in the grass beside him. In 10 seconds he had completely lost his appetite and gained $100,000. The squirrel, which had refused with annoying persistence to become food, had made him a present of a large and perfect diamond. Late that night he found his way to camp, and 12 hours later all the males among his darkies were back by the squirrel hole, digging furiously at the side of the mountain. He told them he had discovered a rhinestone mine, and as only one or two of them had ever seen even a small diamond before, they believed him without question. When the magnitude of his discovery became apparent to him, he found himself in a quandary. The mountain was a diamond. It was literally nothing else but solid diamond. He filled 4 saddle bags full of glittering samples and started on horseback for St. Paul. There he managed to dispose of 6 small stones. When he tried a larger one, a storekeeper fainted, and Fitznorman was arrested as a public disturber. He escaped from jail and caught the train for New York, where he sold a few medium-sized diamonds and received in exchange about $200,000 in gold. But he did not dare to produce any exceptional gems. In fact, he left New York just in time. Tremendous excitement had been created in jewelry circles, not so much by the size of his diamonds as by their appearance in the city from mysterious sources. Wild rumors became current that a diamond mine had been discovered in the Catskills, on the Jersey coast, on Long Island, beneath Washington Square. Excursion trains, packed with men carrying picks and shovels, began to leave New York hourly, bound for various neighboring El Dorados. But by that time, young Fitznorman was on his way back to Montana. By the end of a fortnight, he had estimated that the diamond in the mountain was approximately equal in quantity to all the rest of the diamonds known to exist in the world. There was no valuing it by any regular computation, however, for it was one solid diamond, and if it were offered for sale, not only would the bottom fall out of the market, but also, if the value should vary with its size and the usual arithmetical progression, there would not be enough gold in the world to buy a 10th part of it. And what could anyone do with a diamond that size? It was an amazing predicament. He was, in one sense, the richest man that ever lived. And yet, was he worth anything at all? If his secret should transpire, there was no telling to what measures the government might resort in order to prevent a panic, in gold as well as in jewels. They might take over the claim immediately and institute a monopoly. There was no alternative. He must market his mountain in secret. He sent south for his younger brother and put him in charge of his colored following, darkies who had never realized that slavery was abolished. To make sure of this, he read them a proclamation that he had composed, which announced that General Forrest had reorganized the shattered Southern armies and defeated the North in one pitched battle. The Negroes believed him implicitly. They passed a vote, declaring it a good thing, and held revival services immediately. Fitznorman himself set out for foreign parts with $100,000 and 2 trunks filled with rough diamonds of all sizes. He sailed for Russia in a Chinese junk, and 6 months after his departure from Montana he was in St. Petersburg. He took obscure lodgings and called immediately upon the court jeweler, announcing that he had a diamond for the Tsar. He remained in St. Petersburg for 2 weeks, in constant danger of being murdered, living from lodging to lodging, and afraid to visit his trunks more than 3 or 4 times during the whole fortnight. On his promise to return in a year with larger and finer stones, he was allowed to leave for India. Before he left, however, the court treasurers had deposited to his credit in American banks the sum of $15 million under four different aliases. He returned to America in 1868, having been gone a little over 2 years. He had visited the capitals of 22 countries and talked with 5 emperors, 11 kings, 3 princes, a shah, a khan, and a sultan. At that time, Fitznorman estimated his own wealth at $1 billion. One fact worked consistently against the disclosure of his secret. No one of his larger diamonds remained in the public eye for a week before being invested with a history of enough fatalities, amours, revolutions, and wars to have occupied it from the days of the first Babylonian Empire. From 1870 until his death in 1900, the history of Fitznorman Washington was a long epic in gold. There were side issues, of course. He evaded the surveys. He married a Virginia lady by whom he had a single son, and he was compelled, due to a series of unfortunate complications, to murder his brother, whose unfortunate habit of drinking himself into an indiscreet stupor had several times endangered their safety. But very few other murders sustained these happy years of progress and expansion. Just before he died, he changed his policy, and with all but a few million dollars of his outside wealth, bought up rare minerals in bulk, which he deposited in the safety vaults of banks all over the world, marked as bric-a-brac. His son, Braddock Tarleton Washington, followed this policy on an even more intensive scale. The minerals were converted into the rarest of all elements, radium, so that the equivalent of $1 billion in gold could be placed in a receptacle no bigger than a cigar box. When Fitznorman had been dead 3 years, his son Braddock decided that the business had gone far enough. The amount of wealth that he and his father had taken out of the mountain was beyond all exact computation. He kept a notebook and cipher in which he set down the approximate quantity of radium in each of the 1,000 banks he patronized and recorded the alias under which it was held. Then he did a very simple thing. He sealed up the mine. He sealed up the mine. What had been taken out of it would support all the Washingtons yet to be born in unparalleled luxury for generations. His one care must be the protection of a secret, lest in the possible panic attendant on its discovery he should be reduced, with all the property holders in the world, to utter poverty. This was the family among whom John T. Unger was staying. This was the story he heard in his silver-walled living room the morning after his arrival. The end of Chapter 5 of The Diamond As Big as the Ritz, as originally published in Tales from the Jazz Age by F. Scott Fitzgerald, read by Rick Kistner for Lit2Go on the web at fcit.usf.edu.